And we're back for another episode of the Wire Fantasy Football Podcast. Boys, what's going on?
How we doing, boys? Week two in the books. Great week. Kyle, how you feeling?
I'm feeling good. So far, so good. For the most part, clean bill of health. For some people, not so much. My league's looking pretty good, but happy week two.
Happy week two. Let's jump into it, boys.
Yeah. It's the Wire.
It's the Wire.
D. Griffey. This the Wire, serving up a hot take. Around the league, serving gems like a hot plate. Who's the flex? First pick, rounds 4-8. Trading with the base, that Superman, we need a cape. This that fantasy, see who get the glory. Who's gonna stay up in their lane talking Tory? Who gonna ride up on the train with a hype at? Yeah, you wanna start them, but matches, you might not like that. Three tutties next week, man, he's double covered. Takes on 100 coming out the oven. Tim and Todd, they the guys, know you gotta love them. Take your pick, do it quick, they on fire. The Wire.
All right, boys, so like we said, week two's in the books. We had a good week this week, at least for me. Kyle sounds like he loving his week. Tim? You shouldn't have bragged so much last week. That's all I gotta say.
I think karma kicked me.
Karma came back fucking tenfold.
Oh, jeez. No, I didn't do that bad. But three of my leagues were atrocious.
Were the three leagues that you were bragging about last week?
No. One of them.
That would have been perfect karma.
One of them was. But in our home dynasty league, I think I'm gonna set a record for the least amount of points scored. We have 10 players that start in that league. And one of them scored in double figures, and it was Trevor Lawrence with 10. Dak had 7. Everybody had like 4 points. I'm going to score like 70 points.
It was fucking comical. I got to be honest with you, because we're sitting there watching the games, and we're going, holy shit, Tim's not putting up nothing. And then we're looking at it going, we literally have a kid in the league that's literally selling off pieces so he can rebuild.
And I'm like, losing by like 50.
Yeah. I'm like, holy shit, Tim's going to get his ass kicked by the kid. Fucking rebuilding. Literally
in my rebuild league, my team went off. I had Rondale. I had fucking Juju. I had CeeDee Lamb. I had Kirk Cousins. That team looks phenomenal. Pat Mahomes. I had like 9 first round picks, and I put up like the second most points in that league. But it's a we all know fantasy football is a roller coaster. Did you guys get a chance to listen to the live broadcast of the Vikings game? When they missed that game-winning kick?
No, I didn't.
He's calling the play. He's like, it's up, and it's good! He missed it! Full celebration mode, and they were both like, wait a minute, you've got to be kidding. It was funny. Oh, go listen to it. It was funny.
Oh, that's horrible.
That's a tough scene. I heard about it after the fact, because we had it on Red Zone, so we weren't getting the live... the live listening, but I heard about it after the fact, and that's very on brand for Minnesota anyway, so tough scene either way.
Oh yeah, they've had too many of those moments. They really have.
I'm never drafting a kicker from the Vikings ever. I promise you. I'd rather have Jason Sanders give me 0 than have to rely on a Vikings kicker.
Come on.
Jason Sanders gave me 0 in like 3 leagues.
That's horrible. I'm sorry.
Okay, so we had this discussion but it was mostly me and you, and Kyle kind of just laughed at us.
That's usually how things go.
When it gets real heated, yeah. So what information did I miss this week on kickers? How did I not see a divisional game that should be close, 2 good defenses, 2 solid offenses, and my kicker gave me 0? Because you were the one saying it's all about research and
no, I said that there's research that can be done.
Strategy to it.
Yeah, of course there's strategy to it.
So what strategy did I miss with Jason Sanders?
You just got a shit week, just like fucking Dak had a shit week. Dak, you projected to be the fucking world-beating quarterback of the century.
He still will be.
But he had 6 points this week.
He did.
So there's always bad weeks.
You know what you missed out on?
What?
You didn't account for the fact that Tua was going to get his ribs crushed in and Jacoby Brissett would basically be not a factor at all and just the entire offensive line would decide to take the day off and not block anybody. That's what it was.
Okay.
All right, that make you feel better?
These are the things you have to compensate for, you know?
Kyle, I appreciate you.
No problem, buddy. It's what we're here for. Here for the people.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here for me. Sometimes in fantasy football, you need it. So let's jump into some of the week topics.
So I think we got to start with the
San Francisco 49ers backfield.
I hate it already. I'm over it. It's only week two.
I'm glad I don't own anybody but Jeff Wilson, because I can comfortably just sit there and be like, he's out for a minimum of 6 weeks. I'm not. I don't have to worry about starting. Who's going to be healthy? Like it's probably worse than the Ravens situation right now.
It's miles worse than the Ravens situation right now. Miles worse.
It was like, he's out for the game. No, wait, no, he's back because everybody else is out for the game. And he's out for the game after his first carry. What is going on?
Yeah, I've never seen so many players get hurt.
The two backfields we want.
Yeah. They're a complete shit show.
The two backfields that are like, you know, they were somewhat cheap to buy. They weren't like buying Derrick Henry. And they fucking shit shows.
Now, if the Browns backfield starts to fall apart, I'm done with fantasy football.
No, I'm trading every running back and just starting wide receivers. I'm done with fantasy football. I'll start. James White is my running back one in every league.
Oh my God, it is atrocious.
Now, I think talking about the 49ers backfield, and yes, it's tough with all the injuries that happened and whatnot, but I think the one encouraging thing is that Elijah Mitchell got, what was it, 17 touches or 14 touches?
Something like that. I think it was 17.
Yeah, so he got the Lions share the workload.
Is it because it was just Kyle Juszczyk left in the fourth quarter, though?
No, I think that was kind of the game plan, because Trey Sermon didn't see the ball. When he did see the ball, he lost the ball, and then he got died. A concussion. He died.
Literally got...
You know, may he rest in peace.
The dude got two shots in the head within 30 seconds. How he wasn't out cold, I have no idea.
He basically was.
No, he wasn't. He was rolling around on the ground.
Well, he wasn't of his own mind and body. Yeah.
Subconscious.
Yeah, it's like when you know when you knock something out, it twitches. And,
yeah, that's all that was.
What are you knocking out? They just start twitching. You're giving it, you hit a spider in your living room and it just has a seizure?
It's when you hit the fly and the wings go.
He went back to his Cartoon Network days. You know, it's one of those cartoon
there
type
it is,
things.
There it is.
Jamichael Hasty wasn't really that much of a factor. To be honest, the whole rushing attack kind of suffered. I believe as a team, they rushed for around 3 yards a carry. So you kind of throw this game in the trash. But it was encouraging to see at least Elijah Mitchell. It looked like they wanted to feature Elijah Mitchell. And with him only having a shoulder stinger, he should be back next week. So I expect him to be the lead back anyway. I know you're mad.
Fuck him.
I know you're mad. Trey Sermon couldn't beat anybody out in college. And we said this, but you know, you wanted to believe it. It's okay. We're here for you, buddy.
You can't play both sides of that argument. You can't play the draft capital argument and then say you can't beat nobody else.
He was a third round pick. It wasn't that high draft capital.
Fucking Mitchell's a seventh round pick. Where's the draft? Like, come on.
Shanahanigans. All I have to say. Shanahanigans. Nothing in his world makes sense.
Fuck Shanahanigans, whatever the fuck you're saying. Fuck Mitchell. Fuck the 49ers. That's where I'm at this point. Fuck everybody but Debo.
Listen, a lot of people spent a lot of good fab on Elijah Mitchell.
Fuck them too.
I said not to. And Jimmy is playing well.
Jimmy's
playing well. In all seriousness. I don't think Lance plays at all this year.
The only way Lance plays is if
Jimmy gets hurt.
Jimmy gets hurt or they have no shot at the playoffs, which, I mean, they're going to be in the race somewhere.
I mean, their defense is healthy again. I honestly think I have them a 13-win team. Regardless of who's at quarterback.
That's interesting.
They're a very good football team. Their defense got destroyed last year with ACL injuries.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Granted, they have to play the Cardinals twice, who are legit.
The Cardinals absolutely. Are a real
honestly,
deal.
They might be one of the top. I have them as the fourth best team in the NFL. Bucks, Chiefs, Rams, Cardinals.
Wow.
Interesting.
I can't really argue with that list. The only thing that makes me nervous is that Chiefs defense. Fucking suspect.
Yeah, but any team with Patrick Mahomes is a top four team. Doesn't matter.
Fair enough. I won't argue that.
So, let's hop into some injuries here.
So, before we jump into this, we're saying we're running with Mitchell? Is that because Hasty's hurt?
Anybody there.
Sermon's concussed and God knows what world.
Listen.
We're saying Jeff Wilson's out till at least week 7. So, are we worried about them bringing in Duke Johnson, Lamar Miller?
I'm not worried about Lamar.
I'm not worried
Johnson
about
Johnson is a good little PPR back.
No,
you're good. I'm not worried about a lot of Jags that didn't have a job. And the only reason they have a job is because everybody seems to be falling off the earth. But like I was saying before, a lot of people spent a good amount of fab on Elijah Mitchell. You spent that money, you might as well use him. He's pretty much the last guy standing anyway. They wanted to feature him pretty much throughout the whole game. So one thing I will say is if you have an IR spot, it's probably a good idea to grab Jeff Wilson, stash him on your IR spot, and just let him sit there until he comes back. Because, again, Shanahanigans, he could be just jump right in and be the
Jeff Wilson.
He does, for whatever reason. I don't know.
He's solid. He doesn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, and maybe that's it. Maybe that's all it takes.
He's learning from his dad. You know what I mean? Like, at the end when he didn't have Terrell Davis, like the Patriots did with, like, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, he wasn't anything good. He just didn't fuck up.
That's fair.
So that's honestly what I think Jeff Wilson is. He's Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis 2.0. He's nothing special. He's nothing.
I miss the law firm. those were better days.
No, I like Damien Harris, so I'm happy with it. But so
all right. So
I think we all got our consensus. We all disagree on it.
I just don't want anything to do with it at this point.
Yeah.
Gotta be honest.
Yeah, it's a rough situation, and it's one of those things where you're gonna have better options. You have to.
I don't know if you, I mean,
if you were relying on Elijah Mitchell this week, you have legit problems and you're not going to win this week.
That's possible. That's fair.
You picked him up, but you didn't start him. If you started him, you either sat somebody who was good or your team sucks.
All right. So if I told you before all this happened, before we played our games and whatnot, that Elijah Mitchell was going to get 17 touches, would you be happy with him as a flex play?
What am I, here it comes down the list. What are my other options? If it's week two and I'm relying on Elijah Mitchell.
Let's put it this way. If you were a Mostert owner and you have had Mitchell come in, I'm happy with that. I would be comfortable starting Mitchell.
But I don't think you're relying on Mostert either.
Was there RB2 that went zero RB? Is there RB2? Right, well, there's
your problem right there. Don't go zero RB.
Well, that's a whole, but people did it. So we have to address it. So I would think that I would be, if we're going to say any back in, and San Francisco's backfield is going to get 17 touches, even if it's 14 touches. I'm okay with that. I'm completely okay with that. I think that that offense has shown that it's going to be productive enough where these guys are going to be super efficient, and at any moment we've seen that they can break big runs and they're gonna succeed.
Yeah, Elijah Mitchell's the guy until Jeff Wilson comes back. That's if you had to say I had to pick one of the running backs to own, I would go Elijah Mitchell and then Trey Sermon. Until Jeff Wilson comes back, and then I think it's the Jeff Wilson show.
Also, keep in mind, you feel a lot better about his day if his touchdown actually stood as opposed to getting called back. So you feel a lot better about it just getting that touchdown, but them's the breaks.
Fair enough. All right, so I think we've spent enough time there. A lot of injuries this week.
So I didn't watch the first... I didn't watch until probably 3 o'clock Eastern time, maybe 3:30. And on my way home, I was driving probably a 25-minute ride. I got a notification that Landry got hurt, that Baker got hurt, that Tyrod got hurt, that Tua got hurt, that Dalton got hurt. And then it was like, bam, bam, bam.
Oh, yeah, they were all within
It was like I was in a group chat.
Yeah, they were all within probably 20 minutes.
It was my 20-minute ride home. So and it all happened then. I should have just stood up for my football game.
Yeah, you fucked everybody.
Yeah, so you're the guy to blame. That's what
it's my fault. It's my fault.
Should have known.
But thankfully, none of them were serious. The most serious one out of all of them is probably Landry. It's a sprained MCL. He's out for 2 to 3 weeks.
Yes.
Even Deontay got hurt, and he's okay. It looked bad, but he's okay. So, the good news is everybody that we're naming right now is either, a sprained ankle or, bruised ribs.
The one we didn't mention here was Amari Cooper. Him and Tua are the ones that I'm actually concerned with. And the other one we missed here was Wentz. Wentz had a double ankle injury this week.
I still don't know how you do that, by the way.
That boy,
I'd love to know.
I thought I had bad ankles. I don't know what he's doing. He needs to get some stretch bands, and I don't know.
You got to give him your leg day program.
He don't want that either.
Hey, you've been doing a little better.
I've been trying to grow those things for the last 20 years. It hasn't happened yet. But the two that I'm concerned with, the Tua and Cooper, those rib injuries, regardless if they're bruised or broke, well, they're not broken. They both came out with that they're bruised. But bruised ribs suck. Absolutely suck. For Cooper, if it lingers and he plays through it, every time he gets hit, it's going to be a big deal. And same thing for Tua. there's going to be that chance where Tua's going to start taking hits and you're going to see him start flinching and fading out of throws. Those two injuries scare me the most out of everybody here.
That's, I think, the reason why I'm more worried about Tua the most, unfortunately, is because that offensive line looked absolutely horrendous yesterday. And it, I don't see how it gets that much better unless they just do more work to try and keep running backs in to block, extra tight ends to block. For both, it's kind of a pain tolerance thing. So, I mean, you can do injections and other stuff to kind of numb that.
Yeah, and I mean, you can put rib pads on, and we don't know what the extent is.
Well, that's what happened to Tyrod last year. No. I don't want no more cortisone. I have bruised ribs. Leave me the fuck alone, Doc. Nope.
Avoid the lungs at all costs.
Quarterbacks, nope. Don't do it.
Next thing you know,
Herbert's behind you.
I guarantee there'll be a picture this week that surfaces a field running around with needles. Come here, Dalton. We're a team. I'm going to give you your cortisone shot in your knee.
It's a tough scene.
Next thing you know, fucking Dalton's amputating his leg.
Jesus.
But no, I mean, all of them, none of them were like serious injuries where, all right, I have to find a new player to start, or my team looks different now, right? It's not like you lost your wide receiver on your running back one. Everything is
week to week.
It's a sigh of relief, right? Yeah, usually when we have these conversations, we're talking about, all right, this guy tore his ACL, this guy broke his neck, this guy did this, this guy did that. Right now, it's all right, bruised ribs is the worst one of them all. Everything's okay, fantasy football.
For sure. So, for me, Wentz, I'd be paying attention to because he's basically the straw man at this point.
But he played well.
I mean, they benched him for Easton at the end.
No, he couldn't play anymore. He didn't get benched.
I mean, if we're going to say he's going to come back next week and play well, he got benched. Sprained ankles. Derek Carr had a sprained ankle. He played through it. How many times see all these guys play through it?
He was playing well.
He was playing well, but...
He didn't get benched. We can move on.
That is benched, but regardless, Wentz, I would pay attention to that. He could miss time. Tua, I don't know. He's a coin flip for me. Cooper, I'm sure he's gonna play. It'll be a pain tolerance thing. The one that's interesting to me is, and it's we joke about it, but with Dalton having his knee bruise. Does this open up the opportunity for Fields to come in?
You want to start?
Yeah, sure.
I know where Kyle stands on it.
Yeah. I was going to say, we all know where I stand.
Yes. Yes, it does.
So you think Fields takes this and runs away with it?
Yeah, I do. And I do think it's unfair to Andy Dalton. And I think it's one of those things where Week one is that no matter who was the Bears quarterback, it was going to be a shit show. The Rams, having Darnold in front of you and worrying about Ramsey behind you is rough. And that's why they had Allen Robinson ran like 7 yards total of routes. And then this week he gets hurt and Fields is going to take over. I think Fields ends up running away with it because the fans want it. All that media members want it. Everything that's coming around, it's Fields.
Chicago hasn't had a franchise quarterback in God knows how long.
Never. They legit never have.
Yeah. Come on.
Jim McMahon's probably the closest thing they've had. You're not going to give Cutler any respect? Absolutely not.
If Jay Cutler is the best quarterback in franchise history...
You got a problem.
Trubisky took him to a playoff game.
A playoff game is... what is that really what we're doing here? Grossman brought him almost to the Super Bowl, didn't he?
He did. He did bring him.
So, I mean...
Well, he kind of got carried, but either way.
So did every quarterback that's ever played in Chicago. But
right.
It's just... Chicago's never had... The big thing everybody in fantasy football... Everybody in football knows, they've never had a franchise quarterback.
So, bigger point for the fans, the media, and all that. Fields falling to them at 11 is probably the biggest sign of hope that they've had in God knows how long. From a fantasy perspective, absolutely. He needs to be considered, needs to be added. I was an advocate during draft season for, you know, your last pick. I did it on a few teams where it was either Fields or Lance, and I would take him with my last bench pick just to kind of stash him for something like this to happen. Fields played just about a half worth of football, and, you know, he didn't look particularly great passing the ball, but he had 10 different rushing attempts, which that's really what you're looking for with your quarterbacks. You get your Konami code quarterback and you get all that rushing upside. So I'm hopeful for Fields. I like the player. Hopefully he takes this opportunity and makes the most of it.
The big thing, I'm just going to piggyback on what you said. The big thing with Justin Fields is an entire week of him practicing with the ones and game planning around his skill set. Yep. So him coming into the game is one thing. Them bringing an entire system in and bringing an entire game plan in around his skill set is much more important. So I think that's going to be a huge bump for him. He's going to feel more comfortable knowing that they're putting plays in that he's either run well in college, run well in preseason, or run well in joint practices or whatever. And it's going to be a big plus for Fields if they name him the starter like tomorrow.
Well, I think it's going to be one of those things that I would say that he's definitely going to start this week. Dalton, I don't know. They were looking at ACL, MCL. I don't see Dalton suiting up this week. So I think it's going to be Fields. I don't think they'll announce it till the last second. I think they'll do it internally. Just for
competitive reasons.
Yeah, just a competitive advantage type thing. If he does, I think that... sadly, I think that they go back to Dalton.
Gross.
I know it's gross.
It's so gross.
But they are so... I don't know what it is. There's just something that feels off there. Like, they're so set
Dalton
on...
Dalton hasn't played bad either. That's the big thing with it. Dalton really hasn't played that bad.
No, and they just seem like they're so set on keeping him as a starter when everybody obviously knows that Fields is the future.
But why do they need to rush it? Right? Why does he need to play right now?
But, I mean, you're going to lose... You're not going to... Let's be real. Does anybody think that Chicago's going to compete for a playoff spot this year?
They will. They could. They very well could.
Do you think...
They could. They could...
Do you think they finish better third in the division?
It doesn't even matter what they finish in the division. If Green Bay wins the division, they're not going to make the playoffs because of the Cardinals.
Seahawks. The NFC is. So we all agree that they're not a playoff team.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, we're halftime of the Bears. I mean the Lions and Packers, and the Packers look like shit. So I mean this could be the new NFC East. This year, where nobody can get out of their own way.
And that's fair.
The Lions might have looked the best out of all the teams so far.
That's so weird to say. So weird to say.
Desperate times.
Yes. But I don't have them as a playoff team. So why not let him come in? Why not let him get some experience? Why not let them start to see what they got in him? Like, they don't gain anything from keeping him on the bench.
Yes, they do.
What do they gain?
That he can develop more as a player before they just toss him to the Wolves.
No matter what, you're going to toss him to the
Wolves.
You
know what would have helped Zach Wilson? Not playing against the Patriots with a fucking half of an offensive line, half of his wide receivers, and a shit run game. That's why Zach Wilson looks so bad. Now, all of a sudden, Zach Wilson looks like fucking the last year of Cincinnati Andy Dalton.
I mean, to be fair, you were the only one here that believed in Wilson.
I mean, so you guys didn't think he was going to be a good NFL quarterback at all?
I was skeptical.
When a team spends a top two overall pick, I mean, I took him at, the 109? So it's not like I over... You know,
I'm not saying you overdrafted him. I'm just saying that you were the one that believed the most in him out of all of us.
Yeah, because I think I did like what they did in the offseason, but I would have preferred them to hit him to sit a season. It's just a lot of... What would have Mahomes have done if he played year one? Realistically, Mac doesn't look very good right now.
But he doesn't look bad. That's the key.
But that's Bill Belichick helping him.
Right. And I think
babysitting him. Just same thing to it with last year.
And I think that's the key, though, because I get your point, because there is some benefit to that. Aaron Rodgers did it. Mahomes did it, where he sat behind the incumbent starter. But we also see guys that jump in right away and they have some success.
Yeah, outside of Dak and Russ, I can't think of any quarterback that just walked in and was...
RG3.
Lamar
sat for a year and a half, didn't he? Half a season.
It was half a season.
It was at least half a season.
Okay, so half a season, sure. Josh Allen didn't sit. Josh Allen came in.
And Josh Allen looked like shit.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did. He had the worst completion percentage in NFL history. That's pretty bad.
Okay, but that's exactly what Fields is going to do. He's going to come in.
Baker wasn't good year one.
Baker. I still don't.
I think what it really boils down to is the program that's kind of built around him and the situation that it gets set up.
They're much more competitive with him in the game. His rushing ability is going to make them a lot more interesting. It's going to make it a lot more dynamic, and you can start to develop that with the team. Start to develop a winning culture with the team. And I think that's worth more than letting him sit there and do nothing.
Also, I think for what it's worth...
Granted, I'm with you. I think that he should start from here on out. But I don't think they will. They've got some weird thing that they feel
I think
like
because
they
signed him early on and they didn't expect Fields to follow him. They kind of made Dalton a promise that he was going to be a starter. And I don't know why they did that.
I mean, that's bullshit. It's the NFL. It's business.
Oh, I'm with you.
If this guy's better and this guy's going to be...
Best man plays.
Yeah, he's going to win more games, sell more tickets, get him in the field.
Yep. No, it'll be interesting because Allen Robinson, I believe, is playing on the franchise tag, right?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, so they have to do something to keep him happy and keep him in town.
They could just franchise him again and give him a 25% raise. that's pretty much the only way they're going to keep him. So let's hop into these waiver wire ads. So we touched on Fields for quite a bit. Let's start at the top. Henry Ruggs. Henry Ruggs looks good. Do we agree? So the big thing with Ruggs is he was compared to because of his speed, he was compared to Tyreek Hill. It's an unfair advantage. But if he continues to, one, benefit from nobody else being a good wide receiver on the team, and two, continuing to develop his route tree, I think he can develop into a solid NFL wide receiver.
Yes, there's absolutely potential there. I don't disagree with you there. He's a guy that... I get it. If you want to run out and add him, sure. He had a great week this week. No arguments there. Best week he's probably had as a professional so far. I'm not going out and spending my number one waiver claim on Ruggs.
Nope.
I'll let him sit there, pass on him.
Yep.
I don't think that he's going to be consistent, but I think he's a guy that you got to pay attention to at least. He could obviously have some massive upside.
I think he's more of a guy that you can try and buy back in dynasty leagues. Just because he's super young, you might be able to maybe get him for a second round pick, something like that.
My problem
I'm
with
waiting
that
until
is
he has another bad week to do that.
Right.
He has a bye.
I've tried to do that a couple times already, and the problem with that is everybody that drafted him because they somewhat believe in him at least,
mm-hmm.
and they're not willing to sell him cheap.
Yeah.
And that's the problem because he has that first round draft grade on him.
Yeah. And I mean, that's going to happen, and that's okay. I mean, if you can find somebody that doesn't believe, if you can sell somebody on kind of the inconsistent.
Not inconsistent. You know, he's done nothing till this point,
right? And that's the thing. If you can sell somebody on that, then I'm a believer in taking a shot on him. Somebody has to catch the ball besides Darren Waller. Somebody has to, whether it's Bryan Edwards, Henry Ruggs, Hunter Renfro, whoever. Somebody else has to kind of step up and take those catches.
What's crazy right now is I realize that Oakland's the number one pass offense right now.
Overall, in terms of just raw passing,
yeah.
That's interesting.
It's Pittsburgh and Baltimore.
Yeah.
So I'm not adding Ruggs in redraft. I'm not. Let me correct that. I'm not spending a waiver claim or fab on Henry Ruggs.
I've been doing this thing in a couple of leagues where I've just cutting the last guy on my bench and just picking up random players just to see if I catch fire. And I've done that with Ruggs a couple times. I did it with Ruggs and Edwards last week. And I picked wrong, but.
Yeah. So he had a this is the first time he's had over three catches in his career.
That's crazy to say I have a first-round pick.
And he's played 17 games. So 16 games. So I'm waiting to see, and he's definitely not somebody I'm going to start.
No.
So Dynasty, yeah, if you want to go buy him, sure. But right now you're going to have to spend more because he just had a big week. I'd wait until after he has two bad weeks to do it again. Right? I bought him in a couple leagues. I got him from Kyle in one league. It was a big trade. He ended up getting... Terry McLaurin in the deal, and it was a fair deal for both sides, but he was one of those guys where it's like, oh, if you're gonna throw in something, let it be Henry Ruggs.
You get the potential upside.
Yeah, so I'm not adding Ruggs in anything like that. But what do you guys think about KJ Osborne?
So
do you
he's
think
another
that
guy...
offense can keep afloat three wide receivers?
No,
is the real thing.
So. He's a guy for me that's been super efficient, but on a very small snap share. He's not on the field half as much as Thielen or Justin Jefferson is. So he's making the most out of every opportunity he's getting. That's great, but it's just not sustainable. So For me, I'm not going to... Again, he's not a guy I'm spending my number one waiver claim on. If people didn't go grab him last week, I probably wouldn't go grab him this week either. He can sit there for me. If he hits free agency, yeah, I'd pick him up at the bottom of my bench. Just because he's had these big weeks, but I'm not... Do we think that Jefferson's going to keep having these quiet weeks? Probably not. So for me, I'm not touching.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who's just benefited from two blown coverages, really, so far. That's the reason why his numbers are so big. The targets are there, the receptions are there, the yards there, but realistically, he has two big plays and everything else, like 4 yard gains. I don't think I can. If I'm picking somebody up, they have to be somebody I trust playing or starting.
Somebody I see a long-term future for, especially right. this early.
I'd rather own a handcuff or...
Right. And the thing is, especially this early, you drafted your team with the expectations that these guys were going to be good. I'm not giving up on most of my guys this early yet. Just not. Not for guys that are on the field for 20% of the plays.
Like, are you cutting Terrace Marshall right now for KJ Osborne?
No.
I'm not. That's something I was looking in one league. I was like, am I cutting Terrace Marshall? No. Am I cutting Michael Carter? No. I'd rather keep these young players and see if they develop into a bigger role later in the year than the third wide receiver. No, just to be clear,
you're not just talking Dynasty. You're also talking redraft.
This is all redraft. Okay. Dynasty, sure. Yeah, go ahead. Go at him. Screw it. Whatever. He's a second-year wide receiver. He's 24 years old. But redraft, whatever. I'll miss out on KJ Osborne. Hmm. Kyle, what do you think?
I don't mind adding him as, again, kind of the end of your bench. I take a little bit more of a different approach as far as the end of my bench, where the guys are usually going to be either a lot of pure upside, or they're preseason guys that I added because of either a solid preseason or I just had a lot of hopes. So again, kind of like a Bryan Edwards or maybe a Terrace Marshall, for example, where it hasn't quite 100% panned out. So I'm going to move on to somebody else with a little bit more upside. Week one, KJ Osborne had 81% snap share, 9 targets, 76 yards. This past week, did drop down a little bit to 59% snap share, but of course he did have the big play touchdown. You can only be on this field so many plays if you're scoring a big touchdown. Next week, they play Seattle, so that has another potential for a shootout. This defense didn't really get that much better. Last 2 weeks, they've given up, 30 points a game, roughly. So Minnesota's going to be in a lot of shootouts where they have to keep up. Seems like they're, Kirk Cousins having to throw the ball a lot, so there could be potential here. And again, it's at the end of your bench, so you add him onto your team. You get an upside play. If, nothing works out for a couple weeks, you move on. It's that simple. But I don't mind taking the shot on him.
No, and I agree with you. At the bottom of your bench, I would totally go again. But like I said, I'm not spending a high waiver claim. I'm not spending a lot of fab on a guy like this that's probably going to fade into the distance in 3 weeks and we'll forget his name.
Is he the... Realistically, right now, he's looking like last year's Tim Patrick. That's really what it looks like so far. And, I just want, again, I prefer guys with higher upside, like a Terrace Marshall, than I do KJ Osborne. It's not just a dynasty aspect. It's, if DJ Moore goes down, Terrace Marshall could be the wide receiver one, right? But, yeah, I'm with you. I'm not even adding him. I'm letting him sit there in most leagues.
If he's there in free agency, I would pick him up. That's how I feel about him.
Yeah, maybe it's just because I stash so many young players in redraft
I like to be fluid with my team. I'm constantly churning it. So at the bottom of my roster like that, if he's going to keep producing like that, I'll take a shot at him.
At 359, Tyler's cutting somebody. At 7:05, right. Tyler's cutting somebody.
I'm constantly turning my roster.
At 7 p.m., he's cutting the guy who didn't produce for somebody who hasn't played yet that week.
It's what happens when you're bored.
Yeah.
But that's how you catch lightning. That's
oh, absolutely. And that's why, like I said,
For example, at the beginning, before last night's game, I grabbed Guyton.
Yeah, Jalen Guyton. Yep.
And then I cut him at the beginning of this game for Lazard. Just guys that may have potential.
Yeah, you want to hang on to the guy in case something happens. No, I'm absolutely with you. And that's kind of why I would hang on to KJ Osborne for an example. And the only thing I would say, like with the Terrace Marshall take, I love Terrace Marshall as a player. I love him in Dynasty. The only problem I have is you're going to have to continue to wait until somebody gets hurt for him to actually really do anything. Because right now he's, fourth option in the offense in the passing attack.
I completely agree with you. But my thing is, I don't have to rely on that bench piece. So I'd rather have the upside in that bench piece than just somebody who's going to... Because KJ Osborne's just not going to play on my team, regardless of what happens, because of the five wide receivers I would have above him.
Yeah.
So, you know, because in that league specifically, I have Amari Cooper, Cooper Kupp, AJ Brown, and Tyreek Hill.
Sure.
I'm not starting KJ Osborne any week.
No. I guess it comes down to how, your philosophy on how you build your roster and what you want to... Again, how much you really want to turn your roster around.
He also becomes a trade piece, too. If you know, you steal him off somebody and someone really wanted him. And
there's guys on our list that I would 100% rather own.
For sure.
Okay, I'm going to name two or three of them really quick, and we'll touch on all of them. So let's start rattling some guys off. Rondale Moore, 100% adding over all these guys.
Sure. He's starting to look like a real player. I know Kyle's ecstatic.
I'm going to go run a victory lap. Be right back, guys.
Rondale Moore, 100% adding over both of those guys. James White, 100% adding him over both of them.
It's nice to see him start to reemerge.
And J.D. McKissic, adding him over all of them. And then Tim Patrick, I'm adding over both of them as well.
Both of who?
Ruggs and KJ Osborne.
Okay.
Tim Patrick showed last year with opportunity. If he's on the field, he's going to produce.
He's good enough. Yeah, I won't.
He's done it this year so far with Judy out 8 weeks.
I won't argue that one there because he very well could put. We've seen that this exact situation play out last year with Sutton going down. So yeah, I give you Tim Patrick. He's got a little. I don't know what the word is.
A little juice that could become
something here.
You know what? It's turned into the sauce for him because it's a lot. It's not a temporary anymore. This is what, 18 weeks now that he's done this, and you were the hype train on him.
I know. I backed it all the way. So
what are your thoughts on Tim Patrick, Kyle?
Do we really have to talk about Tim Patrick when we were just talking about Rondale?
I think we got to talk a little more about Rondale because
Let's go Rondale and then Tim Patrick. Then go ahead.
The thing I love about Rondale is,
oh God,
listen,
I can't sit this close to you.
You knew this was gonna come.
It's getting warmer in here. You
knew it was coming.
I know what we're getting Kyle for Christmas this year.
Listen, I wouldn't be mad at it.
Tuggy with Rondale Moore on it.
The biggest thing I think for Rondale is he gets manufactured touches. Obviously, he got the big play that, you know, kind of fell apart. You know, Kyler made a play and scrambled around for a little bit. Rondale got wide open.
But with I'm going to help you here. You know I'm against you a lot on him. With Kyler, that's going to happen more and more.
Absolutely.
That's the thing. Most of that offense is him just getting out of the pocket. Like Russ, getting out of the pocket. Lockett is Rondale is like a miniature Lockett, legitimately miniature, because it's like he just runs out of the pocket. Next thing you know, there's nobody around him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's kind of like watching a little toddler run around in the backfield. It's pretty cool. But no, I think the fact that he gets manufactured touches on jet sweeps, you know, any kind of screen plays, stuff like that, that all adds, especially in PPR leagues, that all adds to his upside. They want to find ways to get the ball in Rondale's hands because he's so shifty and makes the most out of, you know, getting the ball in space. So yeah, I'm a big fan. Now he's starting to compete with AJ Green as the wide receiver two. Of course, it's always going to be D-Hop as the one, but it's a matter of who's going to be the two after D-Hop. So
Kirk is playing well.
Yeah,
still.
I was just going to start there.
Kirk is playing phenomenal.
Kirk is playing very well. Kirk is, I think, is easily the wide receiver two in that offense right now.
Three. AJ Green's getting a lot of usage still.
Kirk's getting a lot of valuable looks right now.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I like Christian Kirk, but
I would put Kirk right. If I was going to run that offense right now, I would say Kirk's the two. And it's a toss up between Moore and Green for the three at this point. And that's ridiculous to say. Like, that's how stacked this offense is. And I don't think we looked at that coming into the year and gave it enough credit, to be honest.
I looked at it as D-Hop and then whatever.
I think we all kind of did. But what surprised me the most and what I was nervous about with Rondale was that, yes, he was super shifty in college, but because he was so undersized, I wasn't sure if he was going to be able to, if that was going to translate well, and if he was just going to get manhandled and not be able to get open. I was wrong. I'll straight out admit it. I was dead wrong because he's perfectly fine off the line, and when he gets the ball in his hands, that boy is like a jitterbox. He's all over the place, and it's impressive as hell.
The one thing I overlooked, so go ahead, go back on the takes and go listen to when me and Kyle had our big argument on Rondale. There was no better offense in Arizona for him to go to because it's a college offense that's just going to recreate what he did in college. If he went to Green Bay, he wouldn't be as efficient. If he went to St. Louis, he wouldn't. It's like he's literally just playing college football again.
Brandon, we're super excited over after 1 week. He had an okay week one. I think he finished with 10 points. And this was a super great week this weekend. That's no argument there. And again, I don't know how many weeks he's going to have like this. But
not many.
I think he'll be a nice safe option. Wide receiver 4, wide receiver 5. That would be a nice little add at the end of your bench for most people.
The important thing to take note of, I think, is especially with rookie wide receivers, you kind of want to see him improve week after week. So week 1, 29% snap share, 5 targets. Week 2, 46% snap share, 8 targets. And, of course, the touchdown. So something to keep note of and something to track.
Yeah, I think it's too early to track that. We've seen 2 weeks.
That's a week 4, week 5, week 6 argument.
Yeah. I get where you're going
with it. Consistent improvement.
Because if next week he's at 36% snap share and 4 targets, are you at all surprised? It's a little too early to be trying to get trends. It's a lot of speculation now, and everything we say is all speculation, right?
I got an inside source.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
My injury takes have been pretty good.
No, they haven't.
Yes, they have.
Everybody died. So, Tim Patrick. Let's jump to the next guy. He's literally either getting 5 catches or a touchdown in almost every game he's played in the last year and a half.
I don't disagree with you. There's not much to say on him. He's been consistent.
We don't want
to
spend much time on Tim Patrick.
No, there's not much to say there. He's been good. He's been consistent. He's getting good looks and... He's big. They like him in the end zone. But he's not exciting.
He's not.
He's just consistent. He's one of my guys.
JD McKissic. He's my guy. He's one of my infinity stones. He's one of the guys I have to add on in every league and every roster in every way possible. Because he's a running back that's running back. He's a running back that gets wide receiver touches.
Sure.
And he's. The goal line work, yeah, that's an ad. He got a goal line carry.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect that week.
Exactly. The big thing was Gibson kept asking to come off the field.
So I didn't get to watch a ton of that game.
He kept head tapping. He gestured, take me out of the game. I'm tired.
That's interesting, too.
I saw it 3 times during the game.
I don't know. I'd have to go back and watch it again just to see.
The drive with the red zone, he asked to come out 2 plays before that touchdown.
Sure. But again, is it because he had a long run? Did he get blown up and he was winded? Like that's one of those.
It's just something that's.
Yeah. No, I get what you're
saying. Losing their mind because Gibson lost a lot of valuable touches. But when Gibson's asking to come off the field, that's why.
Yeah. The interesting thing that I saw today was that they were looking at bringing in. Oh, what was his name? From Denver. The running back that they just released.
No idea.
You lost me. Royce Freeman?
No, he's in Carolina.
Royce Freeman.
He's in Carolina. Did Carolina cut him as well?
Unless he's on like the practice squad or something weird.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not worried about anybody they bring in at this point. Gibson and McKissic are locked in as the 1 and 2. It's just like adding Peyton Barber back at this point. Who cares?
I gotta tell you, it infuriated me to watch McKissic fall over himself a good like 3 times that game with a much better athlete, you know, not getting the ball. But the important thing is, you know,
you're sleeping on the athleticism of JD McKissic.
He was falling over himself. Okay. Tripping. He was sleeping on the ground. No, I think the important thing, and this is kind of what sucks, and this is what's, you know, people that have Gibson are gonna have to temper their expectations as far as being a top 5 back is. McKissic's going to be in for the 2-minute drill, the long down and distance situations, stuff like that. They, you know, for whatever reason, have that set out for him as it's going to be his role. So, of course, that's where a lot, especially in PPR formats, that's where you end up getting a lot of your points and a lot of your production for those little scat backs.
So we had this conversation quick at the gym the other day. And the interesting part of me is it seems so odd that with Gibson being a wide receiver in college, that they're not using him as much in the passing game. And I think that's kind of what I was telling you, is that it kind of goes both ways. Yes, he could be great in the passing game, and it should be natural for him. But at the same time, you can't put him on the field for passing downs because he doesn't have that natural instinct to pass block. And I think that's why Gibson's been so valuable in these two, and like you're saying, in these 2 minute situations or end of the game when they need that option, they need the protection. I think that's why Gibson isn't on the field. McKissick is in that sense. I think that's what's hurting him the most, that they probably don't trust him in pass protection, because that's the only reason why I could think of that McKissick would be on the field more than him in these situations.
Is Gibson that much of a mismatch against a linebacker?
Yes.
More than McKissick?
Yes. You're talking about a man that runs 4.3. Like legit 4.3.
I'd have to double check that. But my thing with all these scat backs is it's never even really 40 times. It's usually...
It's the shiftiness.
It's the shiftiness. It's James White. It's Danny Woodhead. It's Darren Sproles. It's a lot of these little guys who change of direction well. You know, you tend them on a Texas route where they have an option to go in or out, and they get, once they get that linebacker leaning one way and they change direction quickly, that's how you get 7 or 15 yards right out of the backfield. That's where these scat backs come into play, and that's where McKissick's really been good. I mean, Gibson's been great, but McKissick is just... There's a reason why he got 82 catches last year, whatever it was.
He's something ridiculous, yeah. No, there's
80 catches last.
There's an argument both ways, and it's just one of those things that we're gonna have to wait and see how it plays out. But I don't think we're gonna get any solid answers either way. But McKissick's gonna be a nice solid piece if he can keep this pace like he did last year.
He's a flex play, realistically. He's gonna be a flex play. You play the matchups. Try to look at if they're gonna be behind in games. It's gonna be a lot of McKissick catching the ball. They're on the field together.
I think the same's gonna be the same. You can be said for White this year. It looks like.
Yeah, then let's jump right into James White. James White is back. And
did you hear
what Bill Belichick and Mac Jones said about him?
I didn't, no.
Oh my God, Bill Belichick went on like a 10-minute rant about how wonderful he is, how good of a leader, how much he helps Mac Jones, how much he helped Tom Brady. Like, he was like, he's one of those guys. He's Kevin Falk. He's Troy Brown. He was naming Patriot Hall of Famers. But like, he's going to get 5 to 7 targets a game, guaranteed, and 3 rushes.
Sure.
I guarantee it. Lock it in.
Yeah, having Mac Jones as your quarterback definitely helps. He wasn't going to see nearly that much with Cam Newton starting, so...
No, he wasn't going to... He was probably going to be useless.
Cam didn't check the ball down.
Yeah, exactly.
He just threw it into the ground.
Right, and what you're looking for with Mac and what the coaching staff is looking for with Mac is to not really push the ball down the field, just take what the defense gives you and kind of dink and dunk your way down the field, which they did a lot with Brady growing up, you know, in the early part of his career too. So I don't see that much of a difference as far as that goes. James White has plenty of good appeal in PPR leagues, so where he's going to get a lot of those dinks and dunks, and he ended up getting a red zone carry the other day too, yesterday too. So a lot of good value there.
And he's been reliable when he's gotten red zone work in the past. The big thing with him is they usually give him the ball when the defense doesn't have a chance to substitute.
Yeah, when they go tempo.
When they go tempo in the red zone, they keep him in, and it's usually a draw or just a quick dive,
yeah,
and they can't bring their big bodies in.
Finish off the drive.
Exactly. Good on White?
I'm perfectly good on White.
Cordero Patterson. 2 good weeks in a row.
He's still not a guy that I'm touching. He's not getting enough touches for me to trust him. And he was great this week, but I'm not touching him at all. Not even a little bit.
Kyle, what are your thoughts?
The guy got carries when it mattered in the red zone. Was getting touches when it mattered in the red zone. Are we worried about Mike Davis's age and if he's going to hold up throughout the whole year? They don't have another running back that they're really using. It's Davis and Patterson. So in that kind of offense where they're going to be down a lot, they could be using him quite a bit. It's just, I think the way that they're using him, I don't think he's any kind of world beater, but he's an interesting, especially with all these running backs going down, he's an interesting, again, if you look at, I know at least Sleeper, but I'm sure in the other formats too, he has that dual eligibility.
Yeah, he does have the dual eligibility. I know you're saying the rushing, but I mean, this week he rushed for 7 for 11.
It's Tampa Bay.
It's Tampa Bay. But even the week before, he went 7 for 54 and had 2 catches for 13, where this week he had 5 catches for 58. And and the two touchdowns. So if he didn't have those two touchdowns, would you be interested in him?
Then we're talking about a guy who was 9 and 12. Right. So, I mean, 9 and 12, this is that same thing. You know, we're talking about guys who are having 12 points a week as well. So realistically, it's one of those things. He's running back eligible. He's proving that he's been more efficient than Mike Davis. Mike Davis got more carries week one, but he got twice as many carries as Patterson, but Patterson got twice as many yards and half the carries. And then week two, he gets the goal line work and he scores a touchdown and he catches a ball out of the backfield and he uses that. He's a playmaker. They need playmakers to get him the ball in space.
I'll give you that. He is the playmaker.
And he's a much better athlete than Mike Davis. Mike Davis isn't that good.
No, Mike Davis is nothing. And I don't... neither one of these guys are guys that I would want to own. If I had to, great, sure. But
drafting Mike Davis in the 8th round or picking up Cordero Patterson in the second week on the waiver wire, sure. The value for Patterson is definitely there.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all in that sense. So let's rattle through a couple of these guys. I mean, we've got a couple guys in here that aren't world beaters, but they're worth mentioning. You got Mooney in here, who's had two solid weeks. Massive target share. He had, 7 this week, 8 the week before. Solid week out of him, 6 for 66. I think he's a nice, safe ad.
He should be owned in most leagues.
Yeah, he's going to have a solid role all year long. It's A. Rob and him. He should be a guy that you should be adding. We mentioned White. Shepard, another guy. He's one of those fringe guys that he's owned a little more than what we typically qualify for waiver ads. I think Tim said he was at 57% at this point.
Yep.
I believe right now, as it stands coming into this game, he was a top 10 wide receiver at this point. Right, definitely top 15.
That was before they count all the Sunday games.
Sunday games.
Yeah. I think
he needs to be added. He looks like he's going to be the guy that's going to be the most productive there at this point. Danny Dimes doesn't look like he has a ton of rapport yet with KG. Slayton. We haven't seen anything out of Tony yet. It seems like it's Shepard. He needs to be a guy that definitely should be added.
You have more career receiving yards in the NFL than Kadarius Toney through 2 weeks.
Yes, I do.
So do you.
Look at that.
So do I.
I'll take it.
So do I. Yeah, I agree. Last two really quick, and then we'll end. Michael Carter and Zach Pascal, and then Tony Pollard. Michael Carter, if you have a spot open and you want to wait a couple weeks and see if something develops.
Michael Carter should absolutely be a guy that should be added. Yes. He is the one that most interests me on this list out of everybody.
I almost cut him last week, but I said...
I wish you would have.
I know you wish I would have. It was a keeper league too, and he could be very interesting going forward.
His snapshot jumped up big time this week.
Yeah, because Tevin Coleman sucks, and Ty Johnson isn't anything special.
Yeah. So he could be very interesting. Little undersized. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
And a bad offense that's going to be behind a lot, he's going to be the pass catcher. That's who I want.
I don't disagree with you there. He's going to get, 14, 13 touches this week. If he can be in that range, 15 touches a game, something like that, catch a couple balls, he'd be a nice serviceable RB3, flex play week in, week out. I'm all for it.
I think he's developing a real role on that team, as I expected coming into the year. Sure. It's. I expected it to take a little bit longer, though. I expected it to be week 5, week 6 before we really even saw him on the field.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a real delay. I thought they were going to just trot those two fucking bums out on the field, and then all of a sudden, he's going to be a breath of fresh air.
I think that was their idea, but Coleman looked way worse than they expected, I think, is what happened.
Yeah, they should have known that. They should have just asked me.
So you got the inside sources now.
No, I mean, I just watch football. Like, Tevin Coleman sucks. We're relying on guys that were good 5 years ago.
Yeah, fucking
Matt Breida, Tevin Coleman, who was a running back for the 49ers 5 years ago? Let's sign him and see if he can be our lead back.
I think that was a signing to bring the culture over. I think that's
and you landed on Tevin Coleman.
Well, who else?
Bring Frank Gore back if that's the case. That's somebody who's going to set a culture.
Listen, the man's trying to box. Let him box.
But legitimately, if you're just signing running backs and trying to build a culture, fuck it. Bring Frank Gore back. Sign Adrian Peterson. Tevin Coleman?
I don't know. I'm guessing here.
That's Tevin Coleman?
That's the only reason I can think of. That's all I got on him.
Tevin Coleman?
That's it.
Fuck Tevin Coleman. He sucks.
Yeah, but it's a program guy. That's what that is.
Does he take his name off the program. Cut his ass. He sucks. He sucks for years.
Go tell that to Robert Saleh.
Oh, I'll message him right now on Twitter.
Well, more of the reason why you should be adding Carter. Carter should be the number one waiver claim on out of this list.
Week 7, week 8, you're gonna thank me. Oh, the Lions are such a dumpster fire. All right.
This is the problem with having the game on as we record.
Kyle, you have anything on Zach Pascal or Michael Carter?
Michael Carter is definitely worth an ad. Pascal, I guess he's a little bit more interesting, but then again, it's all going to depend on the injury with Wentz.
If Wentz is hurt, I don't want any of the pass catchers.
Right, that's kind of the thing for me. Yeah, that throws a wrench in that whole plan.
I'm not even sure I want fucking Taylor at that point.
I don't.
Yeah,
no,
it's
going to be
tough.
The only one I want is Hines, if that's the case.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be tough. With Carter, it was good to see this week. I'm kind of wondering if it was just part of the game plan to have him featured against New England's defense, but kind of take a wait and see approach and take it week by week, see if he does any better than what he did this week, builds off of it.
Yeah, Pascal, he's developing real rapport with Wentz, which is nice. He's interesting if Wentz is healthy. If he's not, I agree with you guys. I might even cut and redraft some pass catchers in Indy. Michael Pittman did look good, and I was busting balls about that. But
so no. I think that's worth mentioning because you guys are going to be going back and forth on Pittman, and I get what Kyle's point is. It did take T.Y. and
Campbell
to go out for him to blow up, but at the same time, he did blow up against the Rams, and that's worth noting. So, I think that goes both ways. I think it's still too early to say Pittman one way or the other. Fair?
He's good, but he's not great.
I still think it's too early. There's an opportunity where he could be great.
Of course, there is. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he definitely has opportunity being the one on the team now. Absolutely.
He has a cap in that offense, though.
So. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
That's why he's not going to be great. He's going to be capped in that offense. Indy's gonna. There's a cap on the lead wide receiver in Indy, no matter who it is.
Sure.
And then last one, Tony Pollard.
So everybody's gonna overreact on him.
I think Alex should be here for this.
Why?
Because him and Kyle, me and you, put our feet up for a conversation between him and Alex when they went at each other about Zeke. Remember?
I think I started that argument, to be honest.
I put my feet up and just read that one.
Because I think Kyle came at me about Zeke saying he was washed, and Alex was on my side on that one, saying that he wasn't, if I remember that argument.
And
correctly.
I was Switzerland. I was like, Tony Pollard's good. Tony Pollard's good. Zeke's still good, but Tony Pollard's better than people think, is all I kept saying. But Tony Pollard is good.
Tony Pollard's absolutely good, but he's never going to get the opportunity while Zeke's there to be relevant.
But here's the thing. He's going to spend his entire NFL career behind Zeke.
Exactly.
Because he's going to get one contract somewhere on like a 2-year, $5 million deal, and it's going to be too late. That's the real issue here.
Agreed.
He's an unrestricted free agent in 2023.
It's going to be too late. What's that? His sixth year in the NFL?
Something like that. It's up there.
It's too late.
No, it's, I mean, he's never going to be the, you know, unquestioned one. He's going to end up in this big group of guys where you end up in a committee, in a committee full of backs, and then you have a split workload. I think with him, the biggest thing is he makes the most out of any touch that he gets, and that's why Dallas makes it a point to get him touches.
That's fair. He has been productive with the touches he's getting. Will he be this productive? No fucking way.
No,
this will probably be his best game of the year.
I think even if Zeke goes down, this might be his best pick of the year. Like, let's be honest. If he's the lead back, he's not getting those quality touches out. Like, they're not manufacturing touches for him because they have to use him in the needed touches.
Yeah, and that's fair. Zeke's still a dog. Zeke's still averaging, almost 5 yards a carry, pounding the ball up the middle. I'm not worried about Zeke one bit. Zeke looked good this week to me. The snap percentage, if I had to guess, was probably...
Zeke got 71%.
There you go. So the snap percentage wasn't even close.
And Pollard had 34.
It's not even... There's nothing about Pollard that concerns me. If you want to go grab him as a handcuff, sure. But he's not a guy that I'd be playing week to week.
Yeah, he's going to get probably 7 or 8 carries, four targets a game, Pollard.
I'd rather go grab McKissick, White, or Carter before I took Pollard.
I mean, he's right there with them, in my opinion, because the upside is there. But the upside is there because if Zeke goes down...
If Zeke goes down, yes. But if you're sitting there week two and you need a running back, I'm going to get any one of those guys because there's a good chance that week to week they're going to have a much safer role than Pollard.
Yeah, and you're not worried about somebody else going down, but, you know...
If you're buying him as a handcuff, sure.
If you're buying him a handcuff, you need him. He's probably one of the best handcuffs. You need him if you own Zeke. You need him if you own Zeke. If you're just looking to stash... You don't need a running back right now, but if you want to potentially get some lightning in a bottle for a trade bait, yeah, go ahead, get him. He's going to have more trade value than James White in the situation where something happens.
Sure.
But if you need a running back to rely on... That's a different situation.
Yeah.
Go grab White. Go grab McKissick. I wanted to kind of break that down in my thought process.
It depends on the situation you're in, and that's all of these guys.
It's roster construction.
Yes.
It's how you want to construct your roster, and there's different... I have different structures in each league that I'm in.
Yeah, that's fair.
Fair. My bench is if I need to rely on guys, if I need guys in case guys get injured. Mm-hmm. There's each bench has it. It's not just... I like Cole Beasley. He's going to be on all of my benches. This league, I need Cole Beasley because I need a wide receiver I can rely on a little bit more because I have a little bit more boom bust players in my starting lineup. It's all flow for me. It's all different.
As it should.
Just to have a little bit of fun, a little fun tidbit. So remember what he was saying about Sterling Shepard? What are you saying? Wide receiver 1 right now?
Yeah, I think he's wide receiver 9 right now in the year.
Tony Pollard's running back number 9 right now in the year.
Woo! That's fair.
Wheels up. No.
That's fair. I won't argue that. Just not sustainable, yeah, my friend.
It's another Memphis running back. Running back university, baby.
Where is he right now?
9.
It is 9. I thought I was right. It is 9. It's a 9. Oh, I love to see it.
But, hey, all I'm saying is his snap percentage went down and his fantasy points went down from week 1 to week 2.
Oof.
That's all I'm saying.
Panic sell. No.
Sell, hurry up. Sell.
Sell hard right now.
You know, I mean.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, you have 20. If you want to rely on Sterling Shepard, go for it. My last bit of information that I wanted to discuss before we ended the episode. Man, I need more beat reporters to have a little bit more information preseason. I can't be finding out week 1. About only one of them. I need to know everybody's eating schedules.
Oh, Jesus.
I need
Christ.
To know what wide receivers are having breakfast with their quarterbacks.
It's very important.
I need to, because what Cooper Kupp and Matt Stafford are doing is unbelievable right now.
How long is that going to last, though? That's the real question.
Are you saying somebody's going to get hurt? Because that's the only way this is going to change.
Woods is just going to be irrelevant all year long?
I mean, Woods is still being... He's putting up the same numbers he did last year. He's putting up 15 points a week. But Kupp is just going crazy right now.
Sure.
Woods still has, what, a touchdown in a 75-yard game? He's not playing bad. It's just Cooper Kupp is blowing him out of the water. And he's playing much better. But I need to know, next year... Who is having lunch with who? Who's having breakfast? Who's going on sleepovers and slumber parties? Who got matching pajamas? Beat reporters need to step it the fuck up. They need to. Because you know what I would have needed to know? Who has breakfast with Mac Jones? James White does.
That's, you know that's who, what we're going with?
I think Jeff Howe is about to tweet tomorrow that James White and Mac Jones have breakfast together. You know who doesn't have breakfast with Mac Jones? Kendrick Bourne.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Kendrick Bourne does not have breakfast with Mac Jones.
Listen, breakfast is the most important meal of the day.
Especially for wide receivers and quarterbacks.
You want to start your day off right, you get with your best buddy, and you go about your day.
Mike Williams started having breakfast with Justin Herbert this year.
100% he did.
He did.
Mike Williams is coming out of nowhere right now.
I think he started eating breakfast, so he's a little bit healthier now.
No,
that's what it was.
Breakfast with Herbert. That's what he's doing.
That sounds like a movie.
I was going to say either a movie or a talk show or something.
We got to fact check that. What actually is that?
But this is what's happening. And it's I need to know this before week 1 next year, before I make my drafts.
All right. We'll make Let's put that out on the Twitter.
Next time I see on Twitter that somebody had breakfast with somebody, I'm sending a first round pick for them. I don't care who it is. I'm buying them in Dynasty because this is going to happen.
I'm keeping this
in
mind.
I like that philosophy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next time you see a tweet, it'll be like Sterling Shepard had breakfast with Daniel Jones. I'm sending you 3 first round picks for him.
I'm sure I'll find that tweet by the end of the night.
He's going to make a bunch of fake accounts.
All the burner accounts.
The breakfast with wide receivers burner account. But no, Cooper Kupp has been fantastic. He's looking like he's going to be a top 5 wideout this year.
He keeps on this path. There's no arguing that.
I mean, if he keeps on this path, he's wide receiver 1.
Yeah.
Let's be honest here. He's putting up numbers that can't be sustained every week.
No, absolutely not.
But
if he can be close to this.
30 points a week is phenomenal.
Yeah. If he can be 50% of this, 75% of this, I'll take it. Way more than I ever expected to get out of him this year. Way more.
Rams are top 5 in passing right now, I believe, and I think they're also top 5 in pace of play. So that's something that's very important to keep
that
in mind.
That is so filthy.
The missing piece, Matt Stafford.
You know how filthy that is, though? To play that fast, and then they get the defense back on the field, and then be that fast again after they get the ball back that fast because that defense is ridiculous.
And they're also the big plays, too. It's not like they're just dinking and dunking, and it's Peyton Manning's offense or Tom Brady's offense.
No, that's what I mean.
Imagine
being the defense that has to play against that. They go, first down, massive play. Now you're chasing this guy down off the field after they score, come back on because the offense got shut down in fucking 3 plays and then come back and do it again, chase the next guy down.
The good thing for them though is they can always gear up for the pass.
Commercial breaks.
Yeah.
I mean, because your offense is going to score, you get a commercial break, and then there's a kickoff, you get a commercial break. So realistically, it's like 10 minutes every single time before you come back on the field.
We still see fatigue, so they're doing something wrong. They got to do some more wind sprints.
They're doing just fine, aren't they?
For now.
Yeah, they're doing just fine. I'm not worried about Ramsey. I'm not worried about Darnold.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about opposing defenses, Meatball.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. The big difference. I thought you were talking about the Rams defense.
No!
Oh,
I'm talking about having to go against the Rams, and they come on the field and fucking... And the defense is chasing them down. Then three plays later, when Ramsey picks them off, they got to do it again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
That's a problem.
Here's the thing. Imagine if Cam Akers was still there. If Cam Akers was still there, I did all my playoff brackets already. Like, I projected the season.
Mm-hmm.
If Cam... I sat in the NFC Championship game and said to myself, if Cam Akers was healthy, I'm picking the Rams over the Bucks. Without Akers, the Bucks over the Rams. That's how much of a difference I think that makes.
I think they play this week, too. That should be interesting.
Do they play this week?
I think.
I haven't looked at the schedule yet.
I feel like I heard that somewhere.
That's interesting.
Let me fact check that.
But what do you think about that?
That's an interesting date. I mean, that means you have them beating out Arizona then.
Yes. Yeah, the Rams and Bucks play this week.
That'll be an interesting game.
Yes, it will. What time?
I don't know. I went on Sleeper. They don't tell me the time.
Damn, guys. This is the facts that I need.
No, it's not really that important. Nobody cares either. So that's all I got. You guys got anything else?
No, we got a long list this week. We hit a lot of good topics. I think we're okay.
Since it's going to be fantasy relevant for next week, we're beginning of the 4th quarter, and the only 2 players to touch the ball so far are Aaron Jones and TJ Hockenson.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm not mad about it. Well, I am mad about it because fuck Aaron Jones at this point.
He has, what, 3 touchdowns? 4 touchdowns?
Yeah, he's screwing me big time right now.
He's caught 2 and ran 2?
Yep.
A.J. Dillon couldn't get any touches at all?
Nope, not a thing. No. Nothing. Doesn't look like anybody else wants to play there. It'll be the Aaron Jones show today, so there goes that win. But I beat Alex in the other league, so we'll take that win.
It's all in finding the positives.
So, yeah. You win some, you lose some, boys. But that's all I got.
Until next week.
Until next week.
Take it easy, guys.
Peace.